if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 356. This is our 2025 RBC Canadian Open and KLM Open Tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website, where we have in-depth betting previews for both the RBC Canadian and the KLM Opens. Paul has been busy in the stats lab pulling together masses of data. We have detailed form, event and combi sheets, plus our new and old predictor models for both events this week. All of our content and data is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall or registration required. We're available on X. You can follow us. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We are on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Well worth subscribing with the US Open next week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one's quite local to me, actually. It's from Upminster Ranger, and he is in Essex. Good morning, Upminster. Entitled, Great Theme, 5 stars. Not only does the Golf Betting System podcast offer excellent data-backed insights, it has a great, in brackets, and largely unmentioned, close brackets, theme tune, which I worryingly found myself humming in the checkout queue the other day. Great work, lads. Keep it up. So thank you, Upminster. Much appreciated.
Brilliant stuff, Upminster. Perhaps we can turn it into a single, Steve.
What about a 12-inch remix?
Could be. Could be. We get Barry on the lyrics, couldn't we, Barry?
I don't think I'm qualified to do that.
I can imagine Barry on the decks with a sort of vodka in his hand, or and a Guinness on the other, and a Marlboro Light.
I'm waiting for the first person to contact us, having hummed the or you know singing the theme tune, and somebody else kind of clocks it in the, you know out in the wild. It will happen sometime at some stage.
Yeah,
you never know.
Now, I'm going to quickly, I mean, this is the show of the year, isn't it? We've just had the US Open qualifiers. I'm going to run you straight through a list of notable names that qualified for the US Open yesterday. Chris Gotterup, Eric Van Rooyen, Bud Cawley, interesting. Bud Cawley, you know, could have played the Canadian Open and got into the world's top 60 and would have qualified anyway, but he isn't in the RBC Canadian field and he got through qualifying. So that's a big call from Bud Cawley. Lanto Griffin, Justin Lauer, Cam Young got through, Kevin Velo, Niklas Norgaard, Matt Wallace, Thorbjørn Olsen, Mark Hubbard, Victor Perez, Emiliano Griot, Jackson Koivun, who's just about to get himself promoted via the university scheme onto the PGA Tour. Your favourite, Barry, he got through in a playoff, Zach Blair. Mark Leishman from LIV. Blades Brown, very talented youngster. And there is going to be a Poulter in the US Open field. And it isn't Ian, it's his son, Luke. So congratulations to Luke Poulter, who got through from the Florida qualifying yesterday. Two big notables that didn't make it, of course, one being Ricky Fowler, The other one being Max Homer. A lot of good names in there.
Lost in the playoff. Max.
Who was that?
Cameron Young made a birdie, yeah. So still the signs of life for Max. It's good.
Yeah, he's been a bit more upbeat about it on social media, hasn't he? So there's something percolating with Max. And despite the destructive rounds or holes, there's been some good stuff in there. And there's certainly some good stuff at the PGA Championship for a while, wasn't there? So
that always is the way, though. If you can make the birdies, that's fine. If it's cleaning up the mistakes is the easy part, but finding birdies is the hard one. So, you know, if he's making the birdies and they just got to do a bit of a tidying up of the whoopsies, that's good. So positive situation to be in considering where he was. So.
Yep. Keep an eye on him.
Memorial Tournament. Won by Scotty Scheffler. I can safely say I actually got my second winner of 2025 at the end of May.
Well done, Steve.
He was 3-1.
Stuck with it.
He was 3-1.
Took 2 weeks to get the best player in the world across the line, but well done.
Yeah, we thought.
Do you know what though, Barry? I'm learning. If this would have been Steve from last year, the year before, I'd have disappeared off of him.
You would have.
I'd have put someone up like Rasmus Højgaard. And all of my players would have been nowhere near the lead after day one. And I'd have gone, why didn't I just back Scotty? So I am learning.
No, at the end of the day, Steve, it was the right call. So you know, you should be, you know, we should say well done because you still have to, you know, a winner's a winner at the end of the day. And he was, again, in another class, wasn't he? In another, particularly, you know, long game is just scary. And you get into, I mean, we touched on the without Scotty markets last week, but you're almost getting to a point now where you've got to consider them if you're looking at a week where you're thinking, well, Scotty could just mop up here. And of course, we've got the US Open next week. What is he, 3-1 or thereabouts? And there's going to be plenty of without Scotty markets available, I'd imagine.
After his Memorial Tournament victory, Scheffler has now won 11 of his last 28 starts. That's a 39% success rate.
Yeah. Different level.
That's mad. I've got the data golf rankings up here, which I've become far more au fait with over the recent months because OWGR is it's pointless, really. Scheffler has a 3.09 strokes gained per round index. Number two is Rory McIlroy. He is at 2.13. So let's get that straight. Scheffler is 0.96 of a stroke per round better than the world's number two golfer, Rory McIlroy. Now, that gap, if you go below McIlroy, 0.96, takes you down to Siwoo Kim in 20th spot. That's mad.
Yeah, just shows how dominant he is right now and how much further ahead of Rory. But then, yeah, as you say, Rory is a different level to the vast majority of the rest of the players out there.
It's interesting. You've got McIlroy at 2.13, Bryson at 2.03, and John Rahm at 1.98. I'm just thinking this through for the US Open. If you are going down a route of opposing Scheffler, what does that route look like?
And this includes that strokes gained includes, let's say, a couple of less than stellar Scotty performances earlier in the year in February and March when he was coming back from the hand injury. When he had terrible weeks at the Phoenix Open and finished 25th, or at the Players where he finished 20th. I mean, just awful weeks. It's unbelievable what he's doing.
There was talk of Rory becoming world number one again.
It's gone in the last 4 weeks since the Masters.
Scotty's
won three times since Rory won the Masters. Including a major.
given the way the OWGR works, he's going to be world number one for a long time before those wins start even dropping off. And that's assuming that his form falls off a cliff from here.
Do you know what? I want to put the OWGR on the post-it note of doom. I want us to be a data golf rankings podcast going forward. I know we have our things about Liv and all, but I know the OWGR is still used for some qualification metrics. I'll allow it in the case of qualifications for majors, but other than that, I think we need to bin it. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, no, I get it. What those numbers Steve read through from the data golf rankings does highlight is that we need to be seeing more. It's such a shame that we don't see more of the Rory against Scheffler, against Rahm, against DeChambeau heads to heads.
Yeah. And you go back to the PGA Championship. Clearly, Rory wasn't there, but who were the two big names that were kind of close to Scotty? It was Bryson and John, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, we need more of that.
Justin Ray and the statistics he puts out on Twitter is always worth a follow. He's just trying to get into context what Scotty is doing at the moment. And I was having a very good conversation with John Stevens on our Facebook group about, you know, where would you put Scotty in relation to Tiger, in relation to Rory? Where would you rank these kind of, where would you rank him at the moment? And it's difficult, but Justin Ray, here's one street. He has now defended three of his titles. Now, as we know, defending titles is not easy. So he's now defended Phoenix, Sawgrass and Muirfield Village. Now, he was the first to ever win the Players back-to-back, and he's now become only the second player after Tiger Woods in 50 years to defend the Memorial Tournament. Just to put that into context, over the last 30 years, only two players have had more. Phil Mickelson's had 5 championship defences. Tiger Woods managed 23. So that's an interesting one. But most PGA Tour wins by more than 4 strokes over the last 40 seasons. Tiger Woods has 24. Davis Love III has 9. Dustin Johnson has 8. And then there is a tie up with 7. McIlroy, Mickelson, Vijay Singh, Scotty Scheffler. So, you know, this guy is writing himself into... And again, I do agree with what John was saying on the Facebook group. It's longevity. What's going to be happening in 2026, 27, 28, 2030? Is Scotty still going to be at the peak of his powers? Is he still going to be around? Who knows? But right now, this guy is rewriting what we've seen in modern golf just with his consistency and the high level of play.
But Steve, he's mid-20s. He's, you know...
I know, it's scary. He might look like he's 45, but...
Yeah.
But
If he
maintains his fitness, then there's all sorts of records that could go.
He's 28. He's ancient. Yeah, you know, he's past it.
We used to watch Rory, and clearly you'd say Rory's swing is... What do you see in Scotty's swing in terms of longevity, Barry? I mean, you're more into your technicalities as a decent-level golfer. Do you think that's a swing that's going to cause injuries, or do you think it's a swing that looks quite stressless from a sort of body perspective?
Well, think about it over the last few years. Has he ever really been out injured except for the ravioli wine glass incident? It seems
ravioli gate.
Just ravioli gate. It seems to me that the way his footwork operates doesn't allow for pressure to kind of build up in his back when he's turned through the ball. It releases it. He's figured out a way, his own way, that his body works to not apply pressure or to apply the least amount of pressure to his back. Now, that's just a complete eyeball test from somebody who's not a golf instructor or a doctor, but the eye test to me looks pretty okay versus some other swings that look a bit more violent. You know, it's like an early Joaquin Neiman where he's bent over like a pretzel. You know, he kind of went, oh God. And he's not as pronounced in that anymore, but Scotty could be around for a long time. He's just got such incredible timing.
Yeah. Another decade takes him to 38. You know, what could he do staying fit for 10 years? Yeah. As I say, the number of records and achievements could be approaching Tiger-esque.
He now has 16 PGA Tour victories, including three majors. But the interesting thing for me, being an agronomy nut, is that all of a sudden he's starting to win on bent grass and he's winning on bent poa. Mm. He's moving away from those. Don't forget, 10 of his victories are on Bermuda grass.
Yep.
He's got five on pure. He's got five on bent grass now. And last year's Travelers was on bent poa. So, just pointing this out, I'm just looking for small weaknesses. He hasn't as yet got a victory on pure Poana greens. And as we are fully aware, Oakmont next week has vast, huge, speedy Poana greens that are some of the toughest to putt on in the world.
Mm.
So, interesting next week.
This is all Rory's fault. He told him to go get the mallet putter. Do you remember he was struck? This was what, last year? Was it around this time last year or a bit earlier? Rory said, oh, mallet putter. Since then, it's been astonishing.
Mm.
Yeah.
He actually won last week with a neutral putter. I think he lost 0.06 on the greens, but neutral as effect. So he was putting to field average.
Yeah. But when you're dominating from tee to green.
Yeah. Doesn't really matter.
Virtually out the top five in terms of off the tee and approach each week is just, incredible. You only have to putt neutrally to get yourself into that position, which is what he does.
What were your thoughts on the rest of the Muirfield leaderboard? Clearly now Ben Griffin is seriously putting his hand up for a Ryder Cup qualification spot or pick.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a chance last week, wasn't there, where Griffin could go back-to-back and potentially over in Austria we could have had a Christopher Reitan win back-to-back as well. That would have been an interesting dynamic should both of them have won, which they didn't in the end. But
he likes a low round on Sundays, doesn't he?
Was that 10 under and 9 under from the last two Sunday rounds?
Yeah, like, oh my God. Tell me your favourite day of the week.
Yeah, I know. It's,
he's the complete antipathy, Barry, of Shane Lowry. I thought I'd just get that one in there. I could throw in Danny Walker as well, but, I keep beating up Danny Walker every single episode. So.
Poor Danny. Perhaps he'll redeem himself to you at some point, Danny Walker. But in terms of the Muirfield Village field, Sepp Straka was impressive again, I think.
Mm.
And, you're talking about Ryder Cup qualification. He's right in there, isn't he? He should get in regardless, but having a cracking season and one that you need to consider for an awful lot of events moving forward, I suspect.
Is Muirfield Village a reasonably fair and equitable golf course? Because if you look at the leaderboard, there's a lot of different styles and lengths of golfers. Like Brant Snedeker got up there. He's hardly popping the ball out there any big distance these days.
No.
He lost nearly four off the tee for the week. So, yeah.
We did say yes last week, didn't we? That's why Rory doesn't like going there anymore, because it just doesn't suit his game of bombing the ball.
Mm.
It's we were having some discussions throughout the weekend, definitely factoring this in mind, performances on Muirfield and even just now recently with Oakmont in mind. And just looking at the agronomy reports you sent out, Steve, like this is what, not quite as short in the short grass, but very, 1 inch shorter in the long grass. Canadian Open this week again. What decent, juicy rough, reasonable speed, so it's like they're in that they've kind of got a theme for the last couple of weeks leading into the US Open, like almost like it's a plan. Could be, but it's good. It's good to see. So, but like, there's a few. Anybody else kind of catch your eye? Like Ludwig had a good fine round on Sunday.
Ludwig caught my eye from a numbers perspective last week because he drove the ball quite straight and long. I'm coming out with the usual US Open spiel, long and straight. Sepp Straka was amazing. He was first for fairways hit. Even though he only bombed it 283, which was 39th in the field, because he was so iron straight, he was first for strokes gained off the tee last week at Muirfield Village. I have backed Sepp Straka for the US Open at 60 on Betfair Exchange.
I am also on board with that. It's but the memorial, the way the course is designed, it can throttle back how far the lads actually hit it too. So a mid 280s or a 290 driving distance for the week is it's capped by the design of the course to force them into longer irons for their approach shots. It's more interesting seeing them hit longer irons for approach shots instead of wedges. So, you know, in terms of that, great course is a great success.
The last two winners at Oakmont have been Angel Cabrera and Dustin Johnson. Both have green jackets in their walk-in wardrobes.
Yep.
But you go below DJ last time out. Jim Furyk, 67th for driving distance, was second, tied with Shane Lowry, Scott Piercy. Lowry and Piercy got it out there. Sergio and Brandon Grace, they were fifth. They were both hitting it long distances. But below then you had Kevin Na was 55th for driving distance. Zach Johnson was in the top eight, 51st for driving distance. Jason Day in 2016, when he was near his prime, probably just over the back of, but he only drove the ball 282 yards at Oakmont, 46th in the field. Because clearly he knew he just had to try and hit some fairways.
Yeah.
Oakmont doesn't really discriminate with power. You can be short but straight. As long as your long irons are working well, you can be right in the mix. It's a 7,379-yard par 70, so it's not excruciatingly long like a lot of these US Open and PGA Tour tests are, PGA Championship tests are. So, yeah, there is an opportunity for a player of a Sepp Straka who's hitting lots of greens, fantastically accurate with both his approach play and his driver. And don't forget, I like the Open Championship second place from the other week. Again, look at every player that's won at Oakmont. They've all got a decent Open Championship record before they win the US Open. There's a few things. I mean, we're talking about this out of school because this should be in the podcast for the research podcast.
This is how you tease the listeners into tuning back in.
It's a flavour, isn't it?
Yeah.
David Lingmuth, Kevin Streelman, they were all in the top 12, 13 players at Oakmont last time. You know, these guys are just, it's fairways and greens, isn't it? So there is a place for short, accurate hitters at Oakmont.
Yeah, food for thought.
Because do you know what? Everyone's going to be chipping out at 45 degrees when they're in this thick, lush rough. No graduated rough this year. I've been talking this through you. I'm kind of going off Bryson, you know. It doesn't feel like a Bryson course to a certain degree. Oakmont. I'll quickly run through the Ryder Cup spots and then we'll move on. Scheffler, Xander, DeChambeau, JT, Morikawa, Henley 6. Ben Griffin has jumped all the way from 13 to 7. McNeely, another backdoor top 10. English, Novak, Harmon, Cantlay. Spawn Dot drops out of the top 12 after his miscut with my money on him last week. Europe, McIlroy, Shane Lowry, Sepp Straka now up to third. He's in, so. Rasmus Højgaard to four. Hatton and Fleetwood. We've then got Rose, Aberg, Dietrich, Matt Wallace, Nicholas Norgaard, Robert McIntyre, Hovland, Olsen, Cantor, Jordan Smith, Aaron Rye. Outside the spots. Right, let's move on. RBC Canadian Open. I think it's a decent field. The week before US Open. Rory's playing. Ludwig's playing. Clearly, we've got the plethora of decent Canadian players now. They all tend to be able to win apart from Corey Connors. Sam Burns, Homer's playing. Luke Clanton's having his first appearance as a professional. Sung Jae Im, Shane Lowry, Harry Hall, and Robert McIntyre is defending. It's a new golf course. We haven't seen this one before, not on the PGA Tour. I've got to say, it isn't your typical Canadian Open golf course. Normally set around Toronto. This is quite a way outside of Toronto, apparently. Northwest of. But you normally get short par 72s or par 70s, you know, like 6,900 yards, 7,000 yard par 70s. Mm. This is, again, Barry, you've mentioned this, it's pretty much the same length as Oakmont next week. It's a 7,389 yard par 70. It's not classical. It was built in 2001 and it's just had a 2023 Ian Andrew renovation. And as Jeff Feinberg has been saying on the Pat Mayo Experience, this whole golf course is just surrounded by farms and cow pasture. So this place is just, there are trees on the course, but it's really wide open. Just a wide open format. If there is wind here, there is no shelter. And when I was pulling all of these stats, the tips together yesterday, it looked quite calm. It still looks pretty calm, apart from Sunday, where Sunday, it won't be an early starter looking at this. It looks like there's gusts up to 35 miles an hour. So, but yeah, you could be getting gusts for the sort of leaders, 25 plus. So that's going to make this place pretty tough. Typical Canadian temperatures, sort of 2017 through to 22 Celsius. So pretty typical to what we saw last week in Ohio. I just get the feeling the fairways here are 37 yards wide. It feels to me, I never got the feeling, you know, they played the Truist a few weeks ago. That worked out that the likes of Sepp Straka and Shane Lowry were fighting that one out. That was far more accuracy driven. I get the feeling with this, though, I think a bit of mumbo off the tee could be just the ticket. Just you just look at it. It looks open. There's a lot of the holes are kind of banana dog legs, but there's no trees framing the holes. They were talking also about tall fescue. And this court, golf course, you know, for players that have $400 to play it, it's part of the TPC network. A lot of long fescue in play. Apparently, that's all been hacked down. And tall fescue, when it's in on the course, is only in play for amateurs, not really for the pros. But I don't know. It just feels to me it's a long golf course. The greens are quite small. They are bent poa in terms of their agronomy. But what it looks to me is if lots of sort of dog legs, wide fairway landing areas. The renovation has put a lot of bunkers around the 300-yard mark on these fairways, but if you're super long, you can bomb those. They don't even come into your onto your radar. The rough is pretty tough, though. It's Kentucky bluegrass, 3.75 inches. So they're clearly toughening this test up with the US Open in mind next week. This was played last year, the 2024 Fortinet Cup Championship on the PGA Tour Americas. It was won by a player that's now on the Korn Ferry called Will Cannon. He won at 5 under par. Apparently, it was gusting 25, 30, 35 every single day. It was also played the 2019 Osprey Valley Open. That was when it was on the PGA Tour Canada. That was won by Frenchman Paul Bojan, bomber. Taylor Pendrith was second. And Barry's love child, Jake Knapp, was third.
That's just a vicious rumour, surely.
Bojan, Pendrith, Knapp, Bomber City. Everybody this week will love Taylor Pendrith. You've just got to ask yourself, has Taylor Pendrith got the bottle to win his own Canadian Open? Apparently, he has played this golf course numerous times. He practices here and all manner of stuff.
Horribly short price. But yes,
but people I'm struggling to back Taylor Pendrith at that price. He was second for approach last week at Muirfield Village behind Scottie Scheffler. So he's clearly in great nick. But you ask yourself, has Taylor Pendrith got the balls to win the Canadian Open?
Hmm.
Nick Taylor won a few years ago.
What about this for a bet on Pendrith the week, though? First round leader. So 35, 40 to 1 in places for first round leader. And he's somewhere between 22s and 28s on the mate for the outright.
Yeah. It would feel like he's got more chance of getting off to a fast start and then being able to think about that over the weekend, and potentially that's where it doesn't happen rather than the other way around.
I'm trying to remember where Pendrith's victory was. Would it have been the Rocket Mortgage Classic? Or the 3M Open. It was one or the other. It was upstate. I think it was the Rocket Mortgage. Which, again, is very bomber-friendly, isn't it?
Yep. He won the CJ Cup Byron Nelson.
Oh, I'm talking absolute gibberish. Apologies, listeners. He won that. So that's the one down in Texas, isn't
it? TPC Craig Ranch, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that I always tip Jordan Spieth on, and he always finishes tied ninth. Now, this is another thing that I've really taken note of this week. Branch Snedeker, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy have all won this at 14-1, 9-1 favourite, 7-1 favourite, 10-1 and 10-1. The next shortest in the odds to win this is Scott Piercy. I was actually on board that week, 50-1. You've got a gap of 14-1 through to 50-1. Where we haven't seen a winner of this going all the way back to 2010. 50-1 Piercy, 66-1 Clark, 66-1 Nick Taylor, 80-1 Kyle Pettersson, Sean O'Hare 100-1, McIntyre last year 100-1. What a great prize. Vegas, both times he won at Glen Abbey, 125-1. So I literally took one from the very top and I've gone nowhere near the prices in that mid-range sub 50-1 area. One of mine has withdrawn already, so he saved me a point each way. Michael Thiel Bjornsson is out. He withdrew overnight. Complained of a wrist injury. Why he fell out the start of the Charles Schwab Challenge. He did withdraw before he was due to play. I didn't think too much to that, but clearly there must be something in it because he's not playing this week. I've only got three, so I'm going to be very attentive to the guys that you two are going to put up. Anyway, my top bet at 14-1 with Betfred 8 place each way, which I thought was quite a nice price. Ludvig Åberg. I just think this course screams Ludvig.
Yep.
And he's been on the downtrend, so I don't think he's going into this thinking, ah, oh, I'm warming up for the US Open. He hasn't played well since he won at Torrey Pines. He clicked quite nicely at Muirfield, especially on the Sunday when he shot a 6 under 66 and was first for strokes team great gain tee to green on the day. Winning a Canadian Open, your first national Open, I think that's the kind of thing that would turn Ludvig on, really. And we know that he putts well on Poana, bent grass, mixed greens, because two of his three victories, the first one he got at Cranchurcia, they were bent Poa greens. And the third one that he's gained this year at the Genesis, which was played at Torrey Pines, they're clearly Poana greens. So I'm on Åberg this week, and I'm very, very, very on high alert for Åberg, for potentially for Oakmont as well.
Yep.
I took him 14-1.
No, I agree with you. Of the players at the top of the market, he's the only one that I've backed and the only one that I have any significant interest in, to be honest. As you say, it's been a bit of a fallow period, hasn't it, since his win, but seemed to be back on track to a large degree last week. And bear in mind, it was a signature event last week as well. So, was he 16th overall, did you say? The fact that this is a new course to the vast majority of the field levels the playing field, doesn't it, for players like Åberg, who's coming in and seeing a lot of courses for the first time. And as you said, when you read through those Ryder Cup rankings, he still sits outside the automatic spots.
That's right.
You know,
are you saying his place is under threat?
No, he'll want to qualify on merit. That's fact, yeah. Isn't it?
I don't see a world where he doesn't get a pick if he's in 7th or 8th or even 12th place, but he's good enough and should be good enough to get through one of those auto spots.
He should be top 3.
Yeah. Well, certainly top 6. So yes, I think there's some motivation there for him to step up a gear, and just from the dimensions that you've described and the preview, Steve, it would seem to fit his game quite nicely, wouldn't it?
I forgot, I do apologise, this is complete oversight from me, I forgot the DP World Tour last week, Van Dellinghausen.
Nikolai von Dellingshuizen, yeah.
I can't believe you didn't pick him, Paul. He was so obvious.
Well, that sparkling form line coming in.
Miscut, 71? I don't know what it was. I do apologise, Paul. I didn't mean to diss the DP World Tour. I just had I am a 52-year-old kind of moment.
The 200-1 price point was kind of a little bit off-putting with Dellingshuizen. But you can't knock him. He's now a DP World Tour champion, so well done to him.
Did you back Åberg this week, then?
Me? Yeah, I've backed him this week, yeah. I mean, I think that, I think, as I say, of the market leaders, he's the one that appeals the most.
Where are you chipping in, Barry, with your tips here?
I backed Åberg as well, just straight up on the exchange. Yeah, I'm not interested. Just on the exchange, win only. Not faffing around with an each way at 16-1. I'm kind of annoyed. I feel dirty. I'm kind of aligned with a lot of your picks this week, Steve. But you, at the same time, you're just coming off a win. So, you know, I don't like to be copy. I don't like to be completely.
I've been there or thereabouts recently. Yeah, I've had a few seconds. I have. Clearly. Yeah. So I'm kind of there. I've normally got a horse in the race most Sundays at the moment. So kind maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, kind of copying her homework a bit this week, but I also on the same sort of train of thought in terms of what the course is presenting or what we think, how we think it might play and who it might suit.
It's going to suit. I mean, when you look at this golf course, you know, you think 7-3, par 70, you know, and you think, but you look into it, it's quite beastly. I mean, there's six par fours over 480 yards. There's two par threes that are 220 plus, and there's two. There's one drivable par four, and only two par fives. Clearly, to par 70, but both of those are reachable. It screams those with power and those with really good long irons. And I think if Oberg actually turns up and plays to his top potential, I don't think Rory's there since the Masters win. I just think Oberg. If he should be a feature come Sunday, at the very least, if he actually turns up with his game.
Yeah.
That's where I was thinking. And you just look at the history of those that win this, it's either top quality or players further down the pecking order. So, yeah, Oberg for me. My next selection's out of 75-1. So are you filling that void between 14s and 75s with any players, you two?
I've got the two others I've backed, 66 and 70, so yes.
Go on then. You go with yours.
The first one I've backed at 66-1 now. It's been backed in a little bit of nibbling of his price, is Ryan Fox. And the reason for that is he is... well. If you look through the winners list of the Canadian Open, there's a lot of internationals, a lot of European winners. It's not been confined to the Canadians, that's for sure, and it's certainly not been confined to the Americans in recent years either. So, going outside of the US and Canada to look for the winner isn't such a bad ploy, I don't think. And yet, Ryan Fox is the sort of player whose form tends to come in clumps. So, if you look back, most recent win on the DP World Tour when he won Wentworth in 2023, he was second at the Dunhill Links a couple of starts later. 2022, he won the Dunhill Links and was fourth in Mallorca and second at the Ned Bank three starts later. And then earlier that year in 2022, he won at Ras Al Khaimah, and then his next four starts, 15th, 9th, 8th, 2nd, and there were another couple of runner-up finishes after that as well. So he seems to be the sort that finds form, finds winning form, and then can go very close or even win again quite soon afterwards. So the fact that he won at Myrtle Beach, and since then, 28th, 20th, and he's coming into a course that I think suits. I think it's going to suit his style of game. He's a long hitter, as we know. The course doesn't offer any particular advantage apart from the select few who have played it. Other than that, most of the players are coming here and seeing it for the first time. Seventh last year at the Canadian Open, of course, on a different track, but in terms of the location or the country, is at least a positive. And I think he'll come into this with some confidence, particularly off the back of that Myrtle Beach victory, which is going to set him up for a good year or so on the PGA Tour. So yeah, quite happy to go with Fox. The other one I've backed is Matt Wallace at 70-1, who's been really encouraging on social media over the last few weeks in terms of the state of his game. And I do tend to keep an eye on what he says, because there tends to be some truth in terms of the way he feels about his game and how that manifests in terms of his results and his performances on the courses. 17th at the US PGA Championship, 22nd at Colonial. He was second after day one. So some reasonable form recently. 35th, 27th, last two Canadian Opens. And we talked about Ryder Cup again, and I think Ryder Cup year, Matt Wallace, he tends to really try to give it his absolute everything, sitting there at 10th spot at the moment. So he knows that if he can muster a win over on the PGA Tour, this side of September, then in all likelihood, he will find his way onto the team. And yeah, I think this presents itself as an opportunity. So Wallace and Fox, and then Oberg at the top for me.
Very good. Couldn't decide you on it. That I mean, this range of players is the range of players that I'm finding fascinating. There's a lot of players around here that you think, clearly Ben Arn isn't someone that fascinates me, but there's players at this price point I find interesting. Fox is one. Kitayama's another. He's got the kind of raw materials. You've got Wyndham Clark here at 66-1 this week with Unibert. That's just ridiculous. There's this new lad on the block, Johnny Kiefer. He's been found out by the layers, but he's absolutely tearing it up on the Corn Ferry at the moment. And this Johnny Kiefer was third in the tournament I referenced that was last year here on the sub tour.
Yeah.
He was third, this Johnny Kiefer chap. I know Woodland's one that's been showing some signs recently. Cam Young's qualified yesterday. He hit the ball quite nicely at Memorial. But I've gone for two in this kind of price bracket. The first one, this guy currently sits in the top 50 on the Data Golf rankings. The top 90 in the official golf rankings. And he's only in the top 140 in the FedEx Cup. I mean, that's murky waters straight away. What that shows you is that Niklas Norgaard hasn't hit it hard on his PGA Tour debut season. But I've always said with Norgaard, and it's a conversation I've had with you before, Paul, you've guided me down this route. And when you look into it, you're absolutely right. Norgaard is far more bent and bent grass poa kind of player than he is Bermuda grass or Paspalum. Last year on the DP World Tour, when he got promoted to the PGA Tour, he was second in Belgium. We've just been there, haven't we? The Rinkven International.
Yep.
He was fourth in Germany, up in Hamburg, at the Green Eagle Golf Complex. He then won the Betfred British Masters at the Belfry, and he was seventh at Wentworth. Those were his top results on tour last year. So I think Norgaard is now coming to golf courses that he's going to thrive on. Interestingly, qualified yesterday for the US Open along with Matt Wallace and Thorbjørn Olsen at the same qualifier. I think Norgaard should take this course apart if he's on it.
Yep.
Long. Decent with his long game. So yeah, Norgaard, I got 75-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way via their each way extra facility. I am looking right now live, and if you fancy it, you can get 100-1 with Unibet, 6 places each way. Niklas Norgaard Müller. Do you think, just from your history on the DP World Tour, mate, and covering the guy, do you think where I've got to with him and the course does make a level of sense?
Yes. Yeah, I think in terms of course fit, it's there. You talked about the Green Eagles form, and that kind of fits better, I think, with this than some of the others. But even so, in terms of raw statistics, I think he can go well. And again, we've talked about this being a new course to the vast majority of the field, and that is where some of these players who've just won promotion have got an opportunity, because they aren't at such a disadvantage to the other players, and you know they're going to come into this with a level of feeling a level of equity, I guess, or quality with the rest of the players in the field. So yeah, I couldn't put you off. I think he's got a chance.
Barry, I know that you are on my final selection this week, so do you want to take the listeners through your view, please?
Well, I'm also on Norgaard.
Are you? Yeah. Oh my God, I didn't know that.
No, seriously, it makes so much sense. I'm just like, this guy's talented. He's got the length. He's kind of just comforting himself to the tour, accustoming, you know, accustomizing himself, acclimatizing. God, I'm in a bit of a tizzy here. The coffee's really activated. But I honestly think this guy is a Ryder Cupper. Like, right now, would you have, if you were given Dietrich, Wallace, and Norgaard, who are you picking of the three? You only get one pick.
Well, Wallace for me personally, but that's because I think he's, in mentality wise, I think he suits him.
Yeah, he's your Jake Knapp. I think he's.
I'd probably take Dietrich because he's got the PGA Tour win in the bag, but I think Norgaard is going to come through in the next few months because I think the agronomy is now going to suit him where it hasn't been suiting him, and he's just getting used to playing on the PGA Tour.
Yeah,
I think as a ceiling, you'd probably take Norgaard out of all three.
He got out of the desert golf and into the more parklandy.
And just the bent grass, the Poana, that's his, the Kentucky bluegrass rough, the ryegrass, that's his jam.
See, for me, Dietrich's in a spot of bother. Since his win, we've about, 11 tournaments there? He's missed 1, 2, 3, 4 cuts, and his best finish is a T22nd at the Valspar.
Yeah, get that.
That's a big hangover. It's kind of concerning, Dietrich. Needs to show signs of life. Anyway, back to Norgaard. Yeah, look, it seemed to be a nice match of course and player makeup for me. All of what you kind of had in your breakdown as well, Steve, was kind of backing up my initial thought about him for this week. And so it just became nice and quick to put the bet on. I do have one other that I've put on. I'll let you do the last one. That's fine. But I have another one who won the Myrtle Beach Classic last year, just to continue that theme. I'm going to back Chris Goddard.
Yeah.
Just playing, popping his head up all over the place on leaderboards. Nice run. Nice run. Just 18th, 12th. That was the team event. 15th, 13th. Week off, 28th. Week off last week. And now into this on a course where he doesn't have to make up the course experience on the field. So it's go time. He hits a plenty long, playing nice. So in we go there for that.
Yeah, I do like Gotterup. I think he's in. Is he in the top four of my current form rank? Hubbard, McIlroy, Vince Whaley, Chris Gotterup at 4.
In strokes
gained total. That's how well he's been playing.
Yeah, and he's number one in your top 25 off the tee.
Oh, I know. And he's number one for tee to green.
Mm-hmm.
He's tied with Emiliano Grillo, but clearly he's on my post-it note of doom, so I'm going nowhere near Grillo. But Gotterup can win. As you said, he won at Myrtle Beach last year. Interesting. My final selection is a player that I know that you've been backing recently to great success, Barry. I managed to get 75-1 on Matty Schmid, 8 places each way with Bet365. If you have a William Hill account right now, they were only offering 6 places each way, but then 20 minutes after I put my preview out there, they switched to 8 places. So Matty Schmid is out there at 80-1 with William Hill. He is the sort that wins the Canadian Open. Came very, very close at Colonial the other week. Didn't do a great deal wrong. Kept Ben Griffin Hollis down the stretch. He's long. He's got great long irons. I thought, why not? Playing some really nice beach, really nice golf.
Just hope he hits enough greens this week to counteract his less than stellar short game.
Yes. He was numb. I know he missed the cut last week, but if you look at the raw strokes gained data from last week at Muirfield Village, he was number one for strokes gained off the tee. That's pretty crazy. On a very tough golf driving golf course. Very tough golf course off the tee. So he's absolutely driving the cover off the ball right now, Matty Schmidt. So, yeah, interesting character, I think. Would you be surprised if he won his first PGA Tour victory quite soon on one of these North American or Canadian tests? I wouldn't. Another one, you'd bear him in mind for something like the Rocket Mortgage that's coming up.
Yeah.
Bombs away kind of golf course, lower scoring.
Perhaps, I've always had a little bit of an issue with him actually finishing the job, because I've backed him before and it's just seemed a little bit kind of rabbit in the headlights right at the business end. But, well, we'll see. I know, perhaps the Nikolai von Dellingshausen win will inspire him. You never know.
These are the vagaries of golf betting, chaps. He was first for strokes gained putting when finishing second to Ben Griffin at Colonial. Next week, turns up at Muirfield Village, Jack's Place. He was 70th of 72 for strokes gained putting. He lost 2 strokes per round on the greens.
Oof. So we need a big bounce back week.
Yeah, you do. I'd prefer him to be number one this week than 70th. But, you know, conversely, he was still in the top 30 for tee to green, and he mashed it off the tee. Best on the whole field last week for off the tee. So I think there's something there with Schmidt. So those are my three. Oberg, Schmid and Norgaard. A very European card there. For the Canadian Open. Any other tips from you guys?
No, all good. Listen.
No, good for me. Just keen to see how Max and Knapp do on their kind of path back.
This is one of my favourite DP World Tour stop-offs, Paul, this week, because we can have a schmalk and a pancake. We're off to Amsterdam for the KLM Open.
We are indeed, yes. The Dutch Open, the KLM Open. Actually, one of the most established events on the tour over the years, isn't it? One that we've had some decent success in the past as well. So whisper it quietly. Hopefully we can continue that theme and get another winner here. We shall see. In terms of the market, Rasmus Nygaard Pettersson is once again the favourite, 16 to 1, and that's despite him missing the cut last week in Austria. Hao Tong Li, 22s. Two-time Dutch Open winner, Joost Luiten, 22 to 1. Of course, I backed him last week, missed the cut, so watch him go and win. Yeah, he was toast nice and early last week, but watch him go and win this week, since I've left him alone.
You haven't put 20... a euro on him?
No, I haven't. And yeah, we'll see. 22 to 1 for Joost, if you fancy a bit of Joost. Keita Nakajima, 28. Laurie Canter, 30. Sam Bairstow. Sunday specialist Christopher Rattan. Ewan Ferguson, all 35 to 1. 40 to 1 bar those players. So another nice open DP World Tour field market. Ladbrokes and Cole both gone 7 places each way, a fifth of the odds, as they have been quite often recently on the DP World Tour. And of course, we've got Betfred, Bet365, both with 8 place each way options. Decent prices. I got all of my bets away with Betfred this week. They were offering some cracking combinations yesterday. In fact, they still are as of the recording time on Tuesday morning here. The course, we're off to the International, and as Steve says, it's in Amsterdam. Now, it hosted this in 2019 and again last year, so that is worthy of note if you're looking at the stats pages. 2019-2024, the two events that were played here at the International. It is a 6,914-yard par 71 designed by Ian Woosnam. 4 par 5s and 5 par 3s is how we get to the par of 71. There was an old par 4, short par 4, which has been converted to a par 3. Hence why we've got that configuration now. It's an exposed, undulating course, wide fairways, large greens, pretty thick rough though. So, as always, and a lot of these Dutch courses are quite similar in that respect. And as always, it's the elements that are going to protect the course. Mother Nature needs to come to the rescue of these courses. Without it, without any wind, without any weather, they can be taken apart. With a bit of weather, they can be quite a test. And it looks like the course is actually going to get some defence this week. I'm seeing 10 to 15 miles an hour pretty much all the way through the event. Gusting 20 to 25 on Thursday, Friday. Saturday could be even stronger winds. Could be 20 as a standard and gusting 30 plus. And then back to the kind of 15, maybe 20 mile an hour level on Sunday. But I think blowing across this exposed course, that is going to cause quite a lot of... Well, it's going to create quite a challenge, I think. And I should imagine it will help to keep a lid on the scoring level this week. In terms of the scoring level, 2019, Sergio Garcia was the winner, 16-1 for Sergio. He shot 18 under that week. Last year, 2024, Guido Migliozzi, we were on board at 33-1. His winning total was 11 under. In fact, 11 under made the three-man playoff, which he eventually won last year. So you can see just from those two renewals that the course can bite back a little bit. It was a little bit tougher last year, 2024. And looking at the forecast, I would say it's a little bit tougher again this year. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a single digit under par winning score this week, which is good. I think a nice, challenging, stern test is always good to see. We shall see. In terms of those two players, Sergio and Guido, both of them hit around about 60% of fairways. Sergio was third for greens in regulation. Guido was sixth for greens in regulation in old money. In fact, the greens in regulation numbers were quite consistent for the whole field. So a lot of players in the 2019 renewal were hitting 70% plus. Kind of 65 to 75 was the number we were talking about generally for most of the field last year. When Guido won. So there wasn't a massive amount of variation. It tended to come down to proximity, tended to come down to birdie conversion when you were on the putting service to make the difference between success and failure, and then bogey avoidance when missing those greens. So a bit of scrambling and managing to get yourself up and down and not making mistakes was the way forward. In my view, in terms of strokes gained, we do have strokes gained data for both events. Sergio was fourth off the tee, second for approach, first for strokes gained tee to green. Guido was 10th for approach and sixth for tee to green. So I think if you're going to focus on two strokes gained aspects, then approach, tee to green would be the two that I would focus on. There may be a little bit more emphasis on short game this year, with the potential for more missed greens given the wind, we shall see. So maybe a little sprinkling of scrambling in there as well. Strokes gained around the green. So yeah, as I say, maybe a little bit tougher this year, given the forecast. Incoming form, both Sergio and Guido had a top 10 in one of their last five starts. Guido was eighth on his last start in Germany and had a huge chance. I was on him that week as well. And he went out and shot 78 in the final round, which just had me burying my hand or head in my hands. But went on to win the week after or the start later. So at least made up for that. Sergio was top 10 going into Sunday on his previous start. Finished 23rd. So both of them kind of came in off the back of Sunday letdowns and their previous starts. So that's food for thought as well. Up back four this week. I swerved the top of market, as I've said, in terms of Yost. I haven't backed any of the other guys near the top. The one that really would hurt, I think, would be if Yost Lauten did win, given I backed him last week. But I'm not going to go there. There didn't seem to be enough last week, unless he literally just took his foot off the accelerator to get home early and focus on this, which we'll see. The four that I've backed, I've started my team this week. John Parry, 60-1 I backed him 8 places each way with Betfred. Right now there's a little bit of 66 out there. A lot of disparity between the bookies on John Parry's chances this week. Some going as short 35, 40-1. I saw 70-1 yesterday when I was writing my preview.
I'm seeing 33-1 with Bet Victor 5 places each way.
Yeah, there's wow. a lot of massive disparity. And I don't mind that. I don't mind a split of opinion with bookies. And you know, given that you, as a punter, can choose to place your bet with who you want and pick the best price. And I thought 60-1 with 8 places was more than fair. So I'm going to keep the faith with Parry. I remember the podcast that we did for this last year where we were talking about Guido, how he'd shot 78 on his previous Sunday and really annoyed me. And I'd said, look, I'm going to keep the faith with him. And he repaid that faith. He won this tournament. And I can't say Parry was quite as bad at the Soudal Open where I backed him last time, but he was second going into Sunday. And him and Ewan Ferguson were pretty clear of the rest of the field. And up against Ewan Ferguson, I thought he had a massive chance of winning. And he shot 72. That was the worst score of anyone in the top 20 when there were plenty of 67s out there. 67 would have done the job. 68 would have done the job. Christopher Wrightam won by shooting 62. So it's full 10 shots better. And say Parry shot 72. So disappointing, but I'll keep the faith. I think he's got enough to play for. I think his game's in good enough shape. And I think the course will suit him this week. Fourth in the race to Dubai, as I mentioned last time. So he's in pole position for one of those PGA Tour cards if he keeps it going. One in Mauritius, second in Kenya, fourth at the Soudal Open, as we've said. He led the field, actually, for greens and regulation in Belgium. So striking his irons nicely. Seventh for strokes gained tee to green for the season. It all fits, I think. The only downside, and this might be where the disparity comes in terms of the bookies, is he has a poor record in the Netherlands generally. But this is his course debut. He hasn't played this course competitively in those results. I think it's a leveller. I think he's also playing far better golf now than he has been in some of those previous years when he's come to the country. So I'm quite happy to almost draw a line completely through those previous Dutch Open, KLM Open results and call it a fresh start for John Parry. 60-1, I'm in. The other one around the similar price point was Marcus Armitage, the Bullet. I backed at 70-1 with 8 places. Again, there's a little bit of 80s out there if you want to take the bog standard each way terms. And I remember him winning the Porsche European Open in Germany back in 2021. That was a tricky course. He won at 8 under par over 3 rounds in the end. It was weather reduced that week. And when I look back, he led greens in regulation on his previous start where he'd finished 8th. And that kind of marked his card for me as a player that when you see his irons, when you see his greens in regulation number starting to percolate, then he's one to look for. And it was interesting that he led greens in regulation last week in Austria. Finished 13th overall. And for me, that's enough to pique my interest. That win in Germany as well from 4 years ago, that came in the first week in June. So like we are now, that's a big tick in the Byron's box, which I thought you might quite like, Barry, because I know you'd like your Byron's. So a previous early June winner. It's caught the eye a few times this year as well. 3 times he's been first round leader, 2nd overall at Ras Al Khaimah, 5th in Singapore. Missed the cut here last year and he was playing poorly last year. Again, I'll just write that off. I think he's got much better chance than that this time round. Then a couple of longer shots. Pablo Larrazabal I've backed. 90-1 I got yesterday with extended places. In fact, right now you can get 100-1 with 8 places each way with Betfred. 110-1 just with some of the standard each way terms is out there. Pablo's one of those that always seems to drift quickly in the market. The bookies quickly forget about him. But, I mean, this is a guy who's won 9 times on the DP World Tour. And he doesn't need a sparkling form line to win a golf tournament. Loves playing in the wind. He's been quite vocal about that over the years. And I've talked about that on podcasts over the years. And if you remember back to Bahrain back in February, he came into that off some poor form, miscut 57, in fact, he came into that. And then shot a 66 on the opening afternoon when it was really windy. In contention all the way through, he had a six-footer to win on the final hole, which he missed, and then ended up losing the playoff. But to get himself into position there off the back of some seemingly very poor form was good. His last two victories came off the back of a 65th place finish and a miscut. So the fact he's coming into this off form of, 56, 31, miscut 51, doesn't put me off. I think that's the kind of form line where we could see him come back and win another golf tournament. Won this in 2023, and that was at Barnardus Golf. And we have seen a lot of repeat winners here. Seve, Bernard Langer, Simon Dyson won this three times. Joost Luiten, of course, twice a winner. So seeing Pablo win a second wouldn't surprise me. And the final one, I've gone a little bit early. I normally keep this guy under wraps until we're right into the middle of Lynx golf season, but I couldn't resist this week. Matthew Southgate. 110 to 1 with the eight places. Again, 125 to 1 out there if you want the standard each way turns. But yeah, I usually keep my powder dry until we're right into the depths of Lynx golf. But what have we got this week? An exposed, windy course. Bit tricky. I think he could like this. I think he will like it. We've seen him do his best work on Lynx tracks, as we know. Open Championship a couple of times, he's done well. Twice a runner-up at the Dunhill Lynx, but he was 10th on debut here back in 2019. Second going into the weekend, so I'm quite confident that he can play this course, and I think the conditions this year are likely to play into his advantage more than ever. Fifth in Turkey recently as well. That was the best result of the season for Matt. That was on a relatively short par 71. He led the field for strokes gained tee to green that week. So nothing much since, which is why we're getting the three-figure price. But again, he's the sort who tends to pop up when conditions suit and can contend off the back of seemingly very little or no form. So happy to take a punt on Southgate. Pablo Larrathabel, the Bullet, Marcus Armitage, and John Parry at the top for me. Any from you, Barry?
Just going to go one this week to keep just a little bit of interest. It does look like some violence in the wind coming through this tournament. So, you know, and rain, you know, it's going to be a tough set of conditions. So I might have a look in running. But for now, I'm just going to go with Schneider.
Hmm. Yeah, had a chance last week, didn't he?
Yeah, nice week. You know, fellow countryman won. You know, haven't moved too far away in terms of, you know, playing in the country next door. So, let's see if he can go one better this week.
Hmm. Yep. No, couldn't put you off. Couldn't put you off. See how he goes. Yeah, maybe one to be inspired by the Nikolai von Dellingshausen victory.
Could be, yeah, the Schneider-Schmid double.
Could be, yeah. German dominance. About you, Steve, any fancies from you?
Was he second at the Open last year? Tristan Lawrence,
yes. He's... yeah, he's been popping up a little bit recently as well. There's been the odd sign, hasn't there?
I've over-egged his performance at the Open Championship. He was fourth. But even so, this is it. Bit of bad weather. Second at the Betfred British Masters and second at Wentworth. You just look at his record, though. He's second in Germany last year. He's had an absolute disaster on the PGA Tour. And then he dropped down in a level. And he was top five on his first DP World Tour. He was fourth at the Sudau Open. Didn't hit a lot of greens, but I don't think that's going to matter this week by the sounds of it. Short game was clearly seventh for scrambling, putted well. Yeah, Tristan Lawrence. I got yesterday 40 to 1, eight places each way with Betfred.
Nice price.
That will work.
Yeah, I thought that was good, so I was straight on him.
Should, considering the wind this week, should we be backing Daniel Gale? You know, I've made bets for worse reasons.
Do you ever get players missing their tea times in Amsterdam? Because I know I'd struggle.
Not that I've seen, Steve, but perhaps they have an extra alarm call or something.
What about the old Open champion Francesco Molinari at 70-1? Come on, this is his kind of thing, isn't it? Do you reckon he's going to make a late run for the Ryder Cup team? Get the old the old partnership with Fleetwood again?
No, but again, you know, some of these players they just start. You talked about Brandt Snedeker earlier, whenever you did, and just the odd sign of life from some players that you thought were kind of, given the modern era of golf, are kind of all washed up. But perhaps there's life in some of these old dogs just yet.
That was crazy. His top 10 at the Memorial. Clearly, he was given a sponsor's invite by Jack Nicklaus, who must like the guy. Mm. He jumped in the top, just one, basically, one Sunday performance. He jumped into the top 90 now. Or I think he's 94th now in the FedEx Cup.
Mm. There you go.
Just with one outing and a top 10 at what? I mean, it was like turning the time back, wasn't it? He tried to qualify yesterday and I didn't see his name, so clearly he didn't then get through to the US Open. So there we go. I hope your bets go well, gentlemen.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
You too, boys.
We are recording a US Open research preview later this week, so keep your eyes and ears ready for that. It's likely to come out on Friday. So we look forward to that greatly. Hope your bets go well. Hope all your teams and whatever go well this week in Canada and in Amsterdam, in Holland. We'll be back for our US Open Research podcast. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf